In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves
Let's
a
do
treat.
That. We've gone to the lobby. We have unlocked the doors and let Alan Adams. We were not trying to keep you out.
Hey, you know what? There's a lot of riffraff out there. I proudly consider myself to be among them.
Yes.
So, you know, it's important. It's important that you keep me and my like out. If we're not expected. So
right, but we need you here now.
Yes, well, and here I am.
We're going to talk movies, but any thoughts on the passing of Paul Rubens?
Yeah, man, like, it's interesting because we were talking about it a little bit beforehand, and I feel like, you know, I'm in my mid-40s, and so I was pretty much right. It was like I was right in the eye of that particular hurricane when Pee-wee's Playhouse landed. Because, you know, it was a Saturday morning kids show, but I was a little bit of an older kid. And so it was like, so some of the more sophisticated stuff I was able to pick up on, although upon rewatching, you know, there was obviously just miles of stuff that was blowing right by me. But, you know, I absolutely adored the show. And then, you know, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Big Top Pee-wee movies that were very formative for me. And then I didn't come to the more adult iterations of Pee-wee Herman until I myself was a little bit more adult, and so it really all sort of like came together, like the timelines lined up about as ideally as they could with regard to my relationship with that particular character, you know. And I made the jokes just like everybody else did. And it's one of those things where you know, it's tough. It's tough to look back on, you know, that stretch where he was a bit of a punchline. But I mean, the reality is, like, we should all be so lucky as to create something that so indelibly impacts so many people. You know, like, honestly, Pee-wee Herman is an absolutely brilliant comedic creation.
Yeah.
Just absolutely phenomenal. The sort of thing that, like, that shifts paradigms, you know, and all that leaves aside, I saw a wonderful thing, online today. You know, amid all the sort of remembrances that just sort of pointed out how many people got their start because of him.
Right. We were talking about Lawrence Fishburne and Phil Hartman.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, you know, it's like Tim Burton. You know what I mean? Mm. Like he did, you know, Pee-wee's Big Adventure was one of his first big like studio projects. And that led to, you know, the sort of stuff that would come following. And then, you know, he makes that movie, and then 4 years later, he's making Batman. You know what I mean? It's just like there are so many people whose careers were either launched or accelerated by their connection with Paul Rubens. Yeah. And, you know, and here's the thing. You know, we all remember Pee-wee, and again, Pee-wee Herman, a brilliant creation. Paul Rubens was an incredibly talented performer outside of that. And it's easy to forget because I think the sort of ubiquitousness of that character, I think prevented him from perhaps getting some of the other work he might otherwise have gotten. But man, like he would just turn up and stuff and it would just be like, oh, hey, it's Pee-wee Herman. And then, you know, 2 minutes later, you've forgotten that it's Pee-wee Herman because he's so good at what he does. You know, the one that kept coming up, when I was looking around at stuff was his turn in, the movie Blow, which, you know, it just like, it's just, if you can do that and be Pee-wee Herman, like, what can't you do? Like, that's the thing. So it's really sad, and it's unfortunate that, you know, he was sort of suffering in relative silence for what sounds like a pretty long time. You know, it's one of those people where, you know, a pop cultural icon, certainly iconic to my generation, you know, a talent who will be ultimately sorely missed.
Absolutely. Alan Adams with us here on Pass the Popcorn. Well, we got through the biggest week of the summer movie season, and nothing much changed. The top of the box office still ruled by Barbenheimer.
Well, and it's the astonishing thing is, like, I don't remember seeing a second weekend this big in a long time. Like, what was it, $95 million or something for the second weekend. Yeah. You know, like that's just amazing. And, you know, and Oppenheimer did, you know, like 30 or 40, you know, and it's just that just doesn't happen anymore.
Mm.
You know, and it's, you know, it's sort of helped by the fact that there weren't any really exciting new releases. I could say that as someone who did not go to the movie theater this weekend. Like, I'm sorry, but, you know, I already did Pirates of the Caribbean. I did Pirates of the Caribbean. I did Jungle Cruise. I'm done with Disney rides turning into movies. Yeah. So Haunted Mansion, I was out on. There was another like smaller like horror film that also made its debut, but nothing that really like moved the dial. And so that leaves room for these other phenomenal movies to cash in on the like, let's be real, just phenomenal word of mouth that surrounded both of them.
And Barbie especially, and maybe Oppenheimer as well, it seems to be one of those movies one of those cultural touchstones that happens every few years where people see it and then say, I got to take my friend, I got to take my sister, these people have to see it with me, and people will go back to the theater multiple times to watch it.
Yeah, and I mean, it's something that I don't remember the last time I did it, but I have every intent of going back to see Barbie again. Like, I know that there was stuff I missed, and it was, you know, and it's just such a wonderful sort of theatrical experience. I'm looking forward to seeing it again. My movie watching was confined to the homestead this weekend.
Well, what did you get to see?
I did see a couple of decent movies. One was a little bit better than the other. I saw a Netflix romantic comedy called Happiness for Beginners, starring Ellie Kemper and Luke Grimes.
Okay.
Based on the novel, the 2015 novel of the same name. And I also saw The Beanie Bubble on Apple TV Plus.
Wow.
Which has a shockingly accomplished cast. Mm. Zach Galifianakis, Elizabeth Banks, Sarah Snook. And on we go. So, yes, which one would you like to discuss first?
Well, I knew nothing about that one, so tell us about Beanie Bubble.
Okay, so as you might gather from the name, it is a movie about the Beanie Baby craze and subsequent crash.
Oh, all right.
It's based on the 2016 book, The Great Beanie Baby Bubble, Mass Delusion and the Dark Side of Cute, by Zach Bissonette. And written by Kristen Gore, co-directed by Gore and Damien Kulash. And it's exactly what it purports to be. It's basically the origin story of Beanie Babies up through it's the rapid sort of explosion onto the cultural scene and the subsequent crash that followed. And yeah, it's sort of split timelines. We start off in 1985. That's where we meet Ty, if you remember the Beanie Babies with a little heart tag that says Ty. Ty, it was a person. I did not know that.
I didn't either.
I didn't know that the company was actually, you know, his first name. But that's played by an almost unrecognizable Zach Galifianakis. man, it's funny. Like you get used to people looking a certain way. And man, he lost the beard. And it's like, who the hell is that guy? It's him and his initial partnership with a woman named Robbie that lives in his building. That's Elizabeth Banks. He is an erstwhile toy maker who's trying to build a company around these stuffed Himalayan cats. his game changing sort of twist, understuffed. So they're a little easier to move around, a little easier to pose, a little cuddlier, as opposed to the traditionally, firmly stuffed animals of times before. That company starts doing well, but things really change when they decide through influence from input from little kids, perhaps we want smaller ones. They can put in a backpack and whatnot, and then the next thing you know, it's all blowing up. But again, this is all like bouncing around from the mid '80s to the mid '90s. The mid '90s, that's when we meet a young single mother played by Sarah Snook and her two little girls, who also encounters Ty, who is living in his mansion. And they're the ones who sort of start really pushing the Beanie Baby situation with the little tags and the names and the little poems and all that stuff. And that's when it all really blows up, thanks to, in part, and I want to make sure I get her name right, a really talented young actress. She was very good in the movie Blockers. Her name's Geraldine Viswanathan. She's an Indian actress. And she plays an intern turned administrative assistant turned, by this movie's account, basically the inventor of corporate websites. In the early days where the internet was basically just like, you know, pages that were just blocks of links and whatnot, the idea of having a company host its own website was a brand new thing. She sort of invented that, and also saw the potential in the tie-in with the collector's secondary market, particularly with burgeoning website called eBay.
Wow.
And all that connection. Wow. And so it's like there's all these machinations going on behind the scenes. Meanwhile, Ty, kind of a POS, it turns out. I'm not going to go into the specifics. You'll see if you watch the movie. And that's kind of it. And you move back and forth through these timelines, and you see as the building of this empire. And then we also get to see as the signs of a potential crash are ignored until it is too late.
I had no idea, but it sounds much more interesting than I would have imagined.
Well, it's funny because it kind of falls into this. And again, I wouldn't have guessed, even if you told me 18 months ago, that I would watch and enjoy movies about the Air Jordan, the Flamin' Hot Cheeto, and Beanie Babies. I would have been like, what kind of nonsense are you talking? But it turns out, if you have the right people working on something like that, and a lot of these stories do have compelling aspects, and if you're able to bring all those elements together, you can make a pretty good movie. And
yeah, I'm looking forward to Pet Rock the Musical.
Right? This is what I'm talking about. leaving aside that, we mentioned Barbie, leaving aside the fact that Mattel has clearly learned all the wrong lessons from this entire experience. I look forward to the gritty reboot of Hungry Hungry Hippos or whatever the hell. it's just really fascinating that this sort of movie even exists. And again, it's an Apple TV original, so it's... they are not skimping on the production values. Like, again, an excellent cast. It's really well made, thoughtfully constructed, and a surprisingly engaging movie considering the subject matter. I was not expecting to enjoy this film as much as I did. It's pretty solid.
Excellent. We're talking with Alan Adams here on Pass the Popcorn. What about your other home viewing experience?
Yeah, this one wasn't as good.
Oh.
Again, and we've talked about this multiple times. I'll bring it up again. Romantic comedies have become largely the purview of Netflix, for better and mostly worse, I would argue. This is another example of that. Happiness for Beginners. It's written and directed by Vicky White, adapted from the novel of the same name by Catherine Center, and it stars Ellie Kemper as a recent divorcee. From Pittsburgh, who has decided in an effort to sort of reset her life, she's going to go and join this sort of this hiking contingent, and she's going to hike part of the Appalachian Trail with this group of strangers. They're going to come together under the auspices of a guide, and they're going to do this whole thing. And she's going to use that as a chance to sort of, I don't know, reinvigorate her spirit, because her marriage ended poorly, a marriage that was predicted to end poorly by many people, including her brother and her brother's best friend. Her brother's a bit of a slacker, but heart's in the right place, and we do get, I'll mention her simply because she's radiant as always. Blythe Danner shows up in a couple of scenes as the grandmother who raised our heroine and her brother. But so Helen, that's Ellie Kemper's character's name, decides she's going to go on this beginner's Appalachian Trail excursion. And so she goes, she meets up with the crew, and we get, I'm not going to go through the individual members of the crew. It's all very sort of like, you know, exactly the sort of people who are going to be in this group because it's that kind of movie. But surprise, surprise, one of the participants is Jake, the aforementioned brother's best friend, played by Luke Grimes. And so, you know, there's sparks flying, there's conflict already. And it's like, oh, I know how this is going to go. That, like, they don't know, but we know, because, again, it's that kind of movie. And then we're off into the woods, and, you know, you've got your you've got your, you know, your standard, your tryhards, you've got your Wall Street bro, you've got your a wannabe actor looking to rediscover himself out in the woods. You've got a young guide who looks even younger, who's trying to make sure everyone respects him, and on and on and on we go. And and we just watch as they wander through the woods and find out a little bit more about themselves, Rich. Look, I'm not going to sit here and go through, you know, and parse the particulars of this plot, because there aren't really a ton. I've told you literally everything you need to know. You don't actually have to watch the movie now. You can. It's fine. It's perfectly pleasant. It's a lovely way to pass the time. You know, and as someone who is a relatively soft touch, I will say my buttons were pushed at the end. I don't know that my emotional reaction was earned by the film. But again, like I said, I'm a sucker. You know, one of the big things about it, it's got that Netflix sheen, you know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about? And one of those things where, you know, about halfway through the movie, it's like, man, like, I don't know how long they had the drone for, but they really got their money's worth. Because it was just like, I mean, just all these rising and dropping, like, overhead shots. And it's like, you're sitting there and you're like, man, you know, back in the day, you know, they would have had to rent a helicopter to do this. Mm. And so I get it. Like, you know, you've got the option. Why not take advantage? And again, they're out in the woods. Like, it's really very beautiful, like set in the autumn. So it's like, you know, you've got all the leaves changing and stuff. But as far as the story itself, I don't know. Like, it's fine. The truth is, I'm all for, I'm all for movies where people fall in love. I'm less engaged when I know who's gonna fall in love with who. You know, 5 minutes into the film. You know, and you know, despite the film's frankly half-assed efforts to steer me otherwise, it's pretty clear what's gonna happen from the get-go. That being said, it does what Netflix movies do very well, which is it has attractive people doing stuff. You know, it's a, you know, there's some snappy banter. Everything's, you know, pretty PG. You know, you get a couple of smoldering looks and not much else. And then you're out of there in like an hour and a half. Yep. You know, it's if you wanted to call it like ASMR rom-com, I'm not going to argue with you. Like, it's the sort of thing where if you put it on in the background to go to sleep, I think that probably could be a successful use of this time. But again, like I said, it's not a bad movie. It's just not a particularly memorable one.
Alan Adams, talking movies with us here on Downtown. Thank you, Al.
My pleasure.
Hope you have a good rest of your week.
You as well.
We'll see you next Monday. Oh, no, we won't see you next Monday. We're off next Monday.
Well, that's good to know.
2 weeks.
I don't even know what I'm going to do with myself.
We'll talk.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
All right.